back, everybody. It's Jay Scott, and it is The Hook Rocks. Thanks again for tuning in. We do appreciate whenever you stop on by. Don't forget to rate us a review when you're done listening. We also are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network that I always do mention. Great network of music-related podcasts, including the official Metallica podcast, Metallica Report. So check that out, as well as all the others. And don't forget to set your app to automatic download so you get the latest episodes of The Hook Rocks right on your phone or right on your device, wherever you're listening. We've had some great episodes recently. We had Joe Satriani, we had Jeff Pilson, Todd Damockerns, The Gens, Starbenders, Tuck Smith. It's been a hell of a month and a half here to start the year, and we're going to continue that today in just a bit. But also, too, don't forget to visit us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Hook Rocks, and you can follow us and get updates on who we've had. Had some great shows that I've attended too. Posted some videos from the latest Mr. Big show, also Jax Hollow and the LA Gun show a few weeks ago as well. So I am getting out in this Chicago winter, although it's pretty mild today. It's like spring at 60 degrees. Unbelievable. But nonetheless, let's get right to it. We've got a return guest, one of my favorite guests. And when he was first on the podcast a couple years ago, we were talking about a show at the Whiskey that he was doing. It's going to be live streamed. And I told him this story about my older brother. And the story relates today, what we're going to talk about. My older brother was 4 years older than me. The reason why I was listening to heavy metal and hard rock at 6, 7 years old was because of my older brother, right? When all my other friends in third, fourth grade were listening to Duran Duran and Culture Club, I was listening to all these bands that my brother was bringing home. And cool. He was a huge Rat fan.
And even better.
He joined their fan club, and he got this this picture with black and white of a wanted sign with all five members of the band, and he burnt like the edges of it to make it look like it was worn, and he glued a slab of wood, like a Western thing, and he nailed it to his door, to his bedroom. And every time I walked by it, I'd be like, that's so fucking badass. That is so cool. 7 years old, 8 years old, however old I was. And, you know, this album we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about this album in three different perspectives today with a legend, Stephen Piercy. He's in the background. You know, he's ready to go as well. We're going to talk about what led up to this album. We're going to talk about the album itself. And finally, how he reflects on it and how he views it in today's world. So without further ado, we'd like to welcome the legendary singer, Stephen Piercy from Rat. What's up, man?
Hello. How are you?
I'm good.
Good to be back for more.
There you go. You're a wanted man. You're back at the season.
Yeah, right. I like the story. That's cool. That's something you would do in high school, you know, burnt it in whatever class that was, you know, and you'd make pipes and you'd make that kind of thing. Like you say, the boards, and you can burn the board and put your rocker picture in there. Yeah, I get it.
It was so cool, man, because he was really into Rat. And we're going to get into that because I want people to really remember what that time was. This was after Van Halen. Van Halen kind of set the tone for all these bands that were about to come in the late 70s. And you mentioned it on a previous interview, too. You saw Van Halen. You went back down to San Diego, and you said, we got to get our shit together.
Well, the thing is, I'll make it quick. It's in the book. A friend of mine, since I'm from L.A., and I really started getting serious about playing guitar in 76, 7. So he'd tell me all the time, oh, there's these great bands you have to go see. And he kept saying, there's this one band, Van Halen. They're playing Gazzari's. They're the house band. This was like 77. 1977, and I'd go, oh man, you know, I'll try to get up there, you know. And then eventually in 78, he goes, now they're at the Whiskey, a go-go. And I don't know what the Whiskey go-go is. So, I go, wow. He goes, you really got to catch him now. You got to see him. So I go, fuck it, man. You know, I'm going to drive myself up there and try to get in and see what's going on with this band, Van Halen, right? So I knew backstage kind of stuff, you know, seeing bands at the sports arena. I just went, hey, you want to smoke a joint, you know? And he said, yeah. And I went, holy fuck, you know, I'm in, you know? So we did our thing. I'm inside. I'm like, where's the guitar player, right? So I was more of a guitar player guy. Still am, but more than, and traded gear and had some great gear. So anyway, I meet Ed, and when I saw, you know, we talked and stuff, and he's like, hang out on stage. It's fucking cool. And I fucking did. I was sitting right there next to him. And this is the first time meeting him, granted. So I'm like, shit, I've never seen him before, right? So I watch him play. It wasn't packed, but they played like they were in an arena. I mean, the jumping, the Ed kicking his amps. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? I mean, I had just seen Zeppelin a few times. And that was the almighty. But I was like, holy shit. Wait till people check this out after the show. I was like, unbelievable. Wait till people check this band out. They're going to be huge. They're going to be huge. I have to figure this out. So anyway, I watched their whole progression. And I said, you know, after seeing VH grow from 78 to two albums later to 1980, I was like, it's time to move to LA. We're not going to get nothing done in San Diego. And lo and behold, but I watched that whole progression, the whole creation of the 80s scene, and a part of it with Mickey Ratt in 1980 and 1981 turning into Ratt with Jakey Lee. So we were the hot thing there with Jakey at that minute. And Motley was out, and Great White was Dante Fox, and Stryper was called Rock's Regime, and you had like maybe definitely Wasp, a few other bands that should have made it, but we all picked up our trip, or they did, from Van Halen. I just had a front row seat. I mean, I knew them, you know. I mean, what a blessing, you know. To this day, I think if I would have never have met them, I might have went down to moved up there years later or something. And they actually came down to San Diego, Ed and Dave, one time to see where we bought our clothes. Yeah. So it was a whole weird thing. You know, here I'm witnessing what's going to be one of the biggest bands on the planet, VH, right? So it was interesting. So that's my little story on that. But it got better years later. We became friends, and I introduced everybody to Charvel and Jax and Ed. And it was fucking crazy, man. You know, front row, Uzz Festival. Come on. I mean, it was Jesus Christ, you know. A pleasure, and a blessing knowing those guys. You know, to this day, I thank them for a lot because I watched and studied the schematic right from the stage, you know. And Ed and I really never talked about gigs really that much at all. You know, it was other shit. You know, maybe if I had an amp he needed, like a Vox 30 or something back in the day. But it wasn't about music. It was other shit, you know, which was way cool too, you know. But hey, I saw it, and the whole thing was created and should be thanked. Van Halen should be thanked for just starting the whole thing. Literally starting the whole thing.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, because initially when that scene started to break, you had the Van Halen thing, and then yeah, on the other end of it, you had the MTV thing.
Yeah.
You know, I always say that you can be an awesome band, you can be kick-ass, but it's also about timing, right?
I mean, sure.
If it's not the right timing, and it was just the right timing for Ratt, for Motley Crue, Quiet Riot, those three bands really
of course.
The initial
of course. And I got to say, you know, Quiet Riot, you know, having a hit with, you know, their first record kind of helped things, but the scene was already stirring. You know, Motley had moved on to Santa Monica Civic. Ratt has moved on to the Palladium, Santa Monica Civic. You know, it was a whole procedure and steps out the door, you know. And then they were passing around record deals left and right after that, you know, to anybody and everybody. And Ratt was one of the last to be signed, to be honest with you. You know, it frustrated Warren to hell, but I knew we would be eventually. We were too good, you know. And I say that as, you know, respectfully, the band Ratt, when we were on, we were on. And that's what got us the record deal. That's what the EP created, all of that buzz. And it was timing. 1984 was the year of the Ratt. What the fuck? Come on.
There was also the Metal Massacre compilation.
Yes. Well, like I say, when I started hanging out with VH, I started learning some things. You know, you move to LA, you got to have a press kit, this, that, whatever. So I released a single in 1980. And then the next thing on plastic from the band Rat was with Brian Slagle, Metal Massacre. He picked Tell the World. And I wrote that Mickey Rat ages ago in the late 70s. And it was a great song in the set. Great song, obviously. We put it on the EP when there were many other songs. But he liked it. And that was the next thing that we did. And then after that, it was the EP, you know. Metal Massacre 1 and then the EP. Yeah.
The EP, I mean, obviously in Southern California, it was a big deal because you guys sold, you know, 1,000+ copies of it, which back in that time was
1,000. We sold fucking something like 50,000,
wow.
60,000. It was crazy. It was just off the charts. And our manager at the time, Marshall Burrell, found a distribution through Green World. I mean, it was a process too, you know, because it was an independent label. So, but it opened the doors, you know, and it got radio play, which was brilliant, you know.
The sound is much different on that EP than what led into Out of the Cellar. And you mentioned Jake E. Lee, and a lot of the songs on that EP were performed with Jake. So the guitar style is a little different, even though Warren played on it. It was still a little different than what. And then Jake, you know, Jake went on to Ozzy's band.
Yeah. He went to Deal first.
Oh, he did. Okay. I did not know that.
And that was like a little thing that didn't quite work. And then he went to Ozzy. Yeah, you're correct.
Do you think by him leaving and that change in style, how did it, do you think it prolonged you getting that record deal or?
No, because here's what was happening. You know, Jakey was a one guitar guy. I was playing guitar too, rhythm guitar for all the way up through Chris leaving and then getting somebody else. Jakey was next. Yeah, Jakey. And then I just stopped playing guitar, but it's not what I was looking for. I wanted a two guitar band. So what happened was, Robin's band moved to LA and they kind of imploded, you know, but Robin, when he moved to LA, cause I think I started this migration. Everybody in San Diego just followed the bands, you know, besides me introducing them to Van Halen, they knew I had something going, you know? So anyway, Robin used to jam with us a lot with Jakey. It was Matt Thorne, Jakey Lee, and Robin would jam with us a lot. He would just come on stage and jam. And then his band imploded. And then next thing you know, everybody's trying to grab Jakey. Even Motley tried to, Nikki tried to swipe Jakey. Robin just became, we became this two guitar band. Jakey didn't like it, which is no big deal. It had nothing to do with who wore what and looked what. It was about, he's a one guitar guy. And that's what he wanted to do. And he was the hot thing, and it didn't matter to me. You know, I always move forward. So it was great with Robin and Jakey. It was starting to really, that's when I was like, wow, this is where it's at, you know? And then we did play with two guitars, with another guitar player with Jake also. So, well, even before Robin, we had another rhythm guy, but it wasn't Jakey's trip, which is great. Understandable. Jakey's a one guitar guy. And the way he played back then was fucking nuts, Jakey, you know, with the bending and the just, it was nuts. He was definitely, you know, something to see with my band back then. And then when he pulled out, me and Robin just started from ground zero. And that was it, you know, grabbed Warren. He grabbed Warren first, and it was cool. Jakey taught him a bunch of stuff. It was interesting. Here's some trivia. As Jakey was writing Bark at the Moon, Warren was writing stuff for Out of the Cellar, and they were roommates. So trip out on that. And then Jakey would be showing him the solos to, like, all these Rat songs to play the next, you know, whenever. You know, it was funny.
It seemed to be a lot more camaraderie back then, too, between the bands.
There was. There really was. Yeah. Because it was wide open. It was so new, anybody could grab it. It's just a matter of where you went with it, because there are other great bands in LA that should have made it. I mean, even during that Quiet Riot VH period of the late 70s, you know, because I saw Quiet Riot in the 70s at Starwood, you know, and this other band called The White was amazing. Yeah, there was other shit going on. It was towards the ends of the Skinny Tie new wave scene, you know, and fuck it, Van Halen gave him a big one of these, you know. But yeah. So anyway, and then, you know, if we're talking about the records, you know, yeah. And then the EP comes out and it's fucking amazing. And we're going, where do we play? We can't play in town anymore. We, you know, it was too small. You know, I'm not going to, you can't do four shows at the Palladium. So you start going, okay, who do we open for? So we opened up for Ozzy one time. We opened up for ZZ Top one time. And then we get the record deal and the rest is history. You know,
why Atlantic Records? Were there other options on the table for you guys?
To be honest with you, I don't think so. And it's really weird, but Robin and I were so ecstatic, you know, because we figured, fuck it. Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones. Come on. Atlantic Records. And then the tighter we got with them due to success, you know, you meet the Grant, you meet the real guys, you know, who run the shit, you know, the Ahmet Erdogans and the Doug Morrises and the, you know, and then you learn a whole nother. Another thing, if you're paying attention. But yeah, we went with Atlantic. They came down and saw us under one condition. Bo Hill was part of the mix. Now, a lot of people don't know that as an up and coming producer. So we wanted like me, Love and Priest. I wanted Tom Allum, right? And they figured, well, fuck it. It's our first record. We don't really, it doesn't matter if it's just guy. We're going to write our songs and that's what we're going to do. It just so happened that we clicked with Bo, you know, and we were both learning at the same time. He was learning Mr. Producer and we were learning, Mr., you know, we're all going to be recording. It's professional. You're talking thousands of dollars. You're talking this and that. I think our the party mode and whatever we were about from the, you know, just milked, spilt over on the EP. Because there was a bunch of craziness involved in that record, which was great, you know, which was great because I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, look, if Bo didn't put it this way, here's another trivia. While we're on the topic of celebrating Out of the Cellar's 40th anniversary, which I, in fact, was February 17th, 1984. Well, 2 days ago, Saturday, I did a couple nights at the Strat in Las Vegas. And one night was February 17th, 2024. So I literally played the whole Out of the Cellar record last Saturday. It was fucking cool, man. It was really cool for that occasion, you know. But anyway, so that's what we're celebrating this year, me. And it's Back in the Cellar tour. It's going to be bouncing around all year. Might have some news coming up soon about a tour, but that's it. I mean, look, what you're talking about is exactly what I'm trying to preach. The real 80s scene, the Sunset Strip experience, I call it, you know, because a lot of people came in from the outside and you know, claim that, no, man, I ran around there. I was with Motley. I was with Rats. We were fucking pals. You were fucking, we don't know you. We were so tight back in the day, you know, with your guys like Wasp, Motley. Yeah, we were tight, you know, we were the gladiators, man, you know, we named ourselves just because of what the scene was. It was all new, you know, we were creating it. And that's the real Sunset Strip experience, which I will be exploring a lot more later in the year. And also 2025. So there's some good stuff happening after I go, well, I don't want to do this that much anymore, you know. But for right now, this year, and on top of that, I really did try to get the original guys together on this anniversary, and it did not happen.
We recording the album, you know.
Yeah.
I like I said, I want to bring people back to that time.
Sure.
Because even though Quiet Riot kind of broke first with Come On, Feel the Noise,
Yeah.
It was Rat that really brought it to mainstream radio with Round and Round. Were you surprised at the reception of Round and Round?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, look, it's always something you want. I mean, look, we've never had a number one, and nor have we really cared. It would be nice. I mean, you can buy number ones. You know what I mean? So it's irrelevant. What's relevant is when you go out and play and you literally see hundreds of thousands of kids a year, you know, that was what made that whole initial, wow, we're doing something here with this record. People love this song, you know, and we played it tongue in cheek, you know, the Milton Berle thing in there. And it just happened to click. And then again, you got MTV, like you brought up. MTV was very helpful because it's another thing that's great about 1984 in particular.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Everything was happening. I don't care if you're Grace Jones or Huey Lewis. I was playing shows with Huey Lewis. I'd shared dressing rooms with fucking, what's that band? REM. I mean, it didn't matter. Anything went. And that's what I loved about the early 80s, that it was just a big mishpot, you know? But then guys like us would stand out because we were like, whoa, what are these first, you know, there was no hair metal term back then. It was hard rock. But I'll tell you what, I embrace that hair metal shit. Bring it on, you know. You know what I'm saying? It's all business, you know, and it's doing well. And any band that is from the 80s should really embrace it and work it, because it was a special time. Like you say, it was a special time in history of music, you know.
It was interesting because MTV came along. It was very primitive. It was the early part of MTV. It was the early part of this rock. And also, too, everyone for a while would dismiss the 80s rock bands. There's sure. been no other scene that lasted as long.
Oh, yeah.
That scene from, you could say, 78 with Van Halen all the way to 92.
Isn't that cool? And you know what? And they're still there. I see it when they come to my meet and greets. My meet and greets, I've opened the door up to a whole, to them taking a trip back into the 80s. They come looking like I did in 1984. You know, it's fucking amazing. It's way cool. And they're bringing their kids, you know, introducing them to rat and roll. I mean, you can't ask for more. You know, you're right. It was just this thing, a smell, a taste, a feel. It's just a whole, you know what I mean? And it's not going anywhere soon, you know. I wouldn't say, no.
You've talked in the past about the dysfunction that existed within RAT.
Not just us. Some other bands are just smart enough to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they understood the business side, I think, more than some of the members of RAT did.
They were forced to understand the business side.
Yeah. But you talk about that dysfunction. Was that always there, or did that come after Out of the Cellar?
It came kind of around after Dancing. You know, we were way cool. Everything was kind of grooving along. You know, I mean, shit. It's like, here's a platinum album. Here's another platinum album. Here's another platinum. Here's another sold out. You know, you get into this thing, you're really not even thinking anymore. You know, on that note, but like I say, all these things start happening. It's night after night, you know, you create your own world to be out there. Everybody creates their own little pod just to be out there. And then you have to get along, right? This is what you get with success. It's not always what it seems. It's very dangerous too. It's a dangerous occupation. Our manager told us that a long time ago, and we believe him now. And it's amazing. I still talk to Marshall Burl to this day, and I love him. And we went through something that'll only happen once, you know, and you're right. It's this 80s thing. But our dysfunction, I would say, started happening around Dancing. You know, I have another book yet to write, and it'll explain a lot of the more of the business instead of all the bullshit partying and all that. But everybody was into their own scene, and you start getting alienated. And our biggest mistake was not taking vacations, you know. But when you're in that machine, especially in the 80s, it was all new, right? So these labels are like, keep them out there, keep it coming, keep it going, keep it, you know. And they were happy as pigs and shit, Atlantic Records. They still are, you know. But that's, you know, that's where the dysfunction. And then, you know, we were literally, sorry to say, you know, the decade of decadence is what it is. We didn't, you know, we weren't these characters by any means that were just, oh, these guys are hideous. Watch out for them. No, we were, you know, the biggest partiers on the block and enjoyed what we do. But in doing so, you pick up bad habits and shit happens. You know, and I don't need to get into that, because every band, it seems, who has success has to lose a member or have some terrible thing happen. And you just start realizing that the game that I'm in, we'll get a little outside here, but, you know, this music business isn't all what it seems it is. You know, it could be a tough one. And look, I stay in the game because I know it better. You know, I know how to stay in here, and I enjoy what I do still. And, you know, I'll hang around for as long as I want to. But that's where the dysfunction came out. That's where it is, right there. You know, started around then due to all those things.
Yeah. As a young kid, I remember one of the things that always stood out with Rat, Motley, Quiet Riot, Van Halen, was the swagger, the confidence that was portrayed in the videos and the interviews and everything. Like, you guys were outlaws, and for a kid who's 8, 9 years old, like, wow, these guys are fucking insane. They're great. Was there ever, I mean, because artists go through that, have that confidence, right? But they also have self-doubt. They always figure, maybe this isn't good enough. Did you guys experience that too? When you guys released Out of the Cellar, was there a self-doubt? Was it good enough? Is this going to land? How did you guys feel about that when you finally put it out?
You know, We actually recorded it in late 1983, by the way. We really didn't think of it. And that's one thing about us. And I don't know, I was more of a director, the director for first few years before it turned to shit. But the mindset was, it's going to do what it does. Look, we're doing this now. We have a good chance as anybody else. Our songs are good, you know, and we didn't know the first single was supposed to be Back for More. You know, it would have been a whole different ballgame. We might not have had a triple selling platinum record right out of the gate. You know, it could have been a whole nother world, except for Doug Morse, the president of Atlantic, another story. I heard from Bo. He said that Doug Morris, president of Atlantic, was listening to the Stellar record going, oh, okay, let me hear, you know. And he said that his kid kept singing round, 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 round while his dad was listening to the record, right? So he told Bo, I got your single for Rat. It's Round and Round. And Bo's, well, why is that? He goes, my kid won't stop singing it. You know? So fuck me on that one. I found that out like about a year ago. I went, well, okay, interesting. That Back for More was, I kind of knew that, but you never know. You go into it just doing the best you can and see what happens. You know, back then our chance was as good as anybody else's. There were a lot of platinum records given out in 1980s, early 80s, you know, just because it was that popular. Nobody knew what they were getting. They didn't know, you know, I'm not talking the Cinderellas and the bands after 85, 86. I'm talking about the hardcore guys, you know. We are the guys who really initially created that scene due to the direction of Van Halen. It's plain and simple in the history of fucking music. You know, you can blame Van Halen on for a lot of things, you know, changing writers, the look, your image, your music, your guitar playing. What Ed did to the guitar will never happen again. There will never be another Hendrix. There'll never be another Ed Van Halen. I mean, it's just one of those things. And now look, every kid on the planet, anybody who plays, has to tap right away, you know? But anyway, our thing in the 80s, it was about flamboyance. It was about looking good, being colorful, dangerous, and exciting. That was my motto that I still stand to this day. But that was our motto with Rat. And when you released the record, we went, we'll do anything. We'll play anytime. And we've played festivals at 7 in the morning in 1984. We'll play with anybody. We'll do anything, any radio. And it was a lot of work. Put it this way. The record first entered the charts out of the cellar, like, if I'm correct, 161. So it took months of work out there. It just wasn't instant. Bam, top 10 album, 3 million sold, you know. We had to work for it. But we knocked out a lot of good bands, including Van Halen, to sometimes, you know. So
when you think back on this now, you mentioned early on in our conversation about the tour that you're doing, celebrating the album.
Sure.
How much does it bother you that you guys can't get this to do
a lot
for tour and celebrate?
A lot. But you know what? It just goes to show, you know, who really has integrity. You know, I mean, Jesus, I think. My God, Bob, put it this way, Bobby Blosser, drummer of Rat, he's ready to go, you know. Carlos, who isn't an original member, he just jammed with me recently at the Whiskey. But, you know, I can't settle for less. And with a bass player who doesn't even look like the same guy, who's really, if you're not into it, you're not into it. Like, and I can only have respect for like Warren for not what he doesn't need to. None of these guys do. I don't need to, you know, it's just a matter of where your drive is. I guess I have a different drive than my guys, you know, and that's where it all, the buck stops. You know, I can't force them, you know, I can just go, you know, this is called business. You know, now it's business. 40 years later, you should be very fortunate. You know, it doesn't matter how deep your pockets are. It's your, the integrity you have for what you created, what you were a part of. That's what pisses me off. You know, it's not the, no, I don't want to do it anymore. I'm fine. It's not that. It's like, well, you know, when we released the box set last year, it was so cool. Besides looking great, and it's a great fucking package, it was due. You know, it was about time, because that's it. That was the real rap right there. 84, well, the EP could have been in there, but 84 to 90, 91, that was it. After that, no matter who we had in the band, you know, it just wasn't a rap without Robin. And it wasn't going to be, whether it was Shanker or whoever. It wasn't going to be. And it had a whole, that's why it never really flew the second time. Although it could work now, you know. But you don't have all the elements, right? The proper elements. Like, say, Motley bringing in John Five, no disrespect. That's not Motley Crue. You know, Rat Without Robin, I said it when he wasn't playing. This isn't going to work. We can do anything we want. We can try as hard as we want. It's not going to be the same. You know, and it never was and never will be. I mean, I go out because I'm the only guy, I'm the singer guy. I write the songs. I have every reason to go out there. I have integrity for the fucking band I created, you know? So I'm out there having a great time seeing these people. I mean, I'm telling you, the meet and greets are fucking nutty. It's like going to a Halloween party, you know? It is 1984, and I love it. We embrace it. It's like, fucking tell me the stories, number one. I see these old photos and just go, man, explain that to me. You know, I just don't go, hey, take a picture. All right, thank you. Get the fuck out of here. No, we hang out and talk and sign. And you want a tit sign. You want this sign. You want that. Whatever. And nothing's changed. These people, they go right into 1984 mode, you know?
Well, that great. You know, I mean, you think about those. You know, I keep going back to you, Motley Crue, and Choir Rock. And there's a reason for that, because those are the three. Those are the three dogs that kind of set the path.
Sure. And
when you think about those three albums, Metal Health, you know, Shout the Devil, although Too Fast, before, and Out of the Cellar. In my opinion, Out of the Cellar holds up the best now, 40 years.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, and it's not just Round and Round and Back for More. It's Lack of Communication. Sure. It's Scene of the Crime. It's I'm Insane. You know, it's all these great songs, and it just flows. There's no power ballad on it. It's just fucking pure rock and roll. And what was considered heavy metal back then, it wasn't considered.
I know. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. It was considered metal.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, when you talk about not being able to get, you know, the remaining members back together again, for a fan like myself and others, this album means so much to a lot of people, because this was this was our gateway for a lot of people into this genre. And I would love to have seen you guys on the stadium tour instead of Poison. I would love to have seen, you know, all that
that's
stuff.
That's politics, man. That's politics. Yes. But then again, like I was saying, we're not the most dysfunctional rock band on the planet. You can go through anybody from, anybody commercially out of the 80s, from Motley to GNR, you name it. I don't care if you're Black Crows, you know, it's there. It's just a matter of how you deal with it. You know, the dysfunction, some make it work. Some are smarter than others. I can't say I have a bunch of guys who are smart enough to even think about what they've even accomplished and why we're sitting here February, 40 years later to the day. Out of the Cellar is the most important thing we've done. It should be fucking, you know, respected, you know, but it is what it is. And I'm out there playing and we're having a great time. I'll tell you what. When I play the record, which I do in its entirety, and then I play Lay It Down, You're in Love, you know, everything else. But I highlight the show with the Cellar record. To play Scene of the Crime and to play, what's the other one? Scene of the Crime and She Wants Money. these songs are so refreshing to fucking play, and they're so fun. People automatically go, what the fuck? Why do they do it? Because we've never played it live. Even the original guys never played these songs live. Not to my acknowledgement, nor did we play the Out in the Cellar set in its entirety. I hear we tried it once, but we didn't. We threw round and round here and this. I'm actually playing round and round fucking third, just like the record. You don't like it? That's the way it is. Oh, it's just, I'm doing what I said I'm going to do. You know, play the record in its entirety, in its sequence. And it's so fucking fun. I'm telling you, people smile on the face. Theater of the Crime, what? You know, She Wants Money, what? They're literally, and it's working, you know. It's fresh. It might take a few shows to get adjusted, but we're getting there.
As we close our conversation, when you think of this album, this is Rat's Legacy out of the South.
Sure. I agree.
Are you comfortable with that? Like that being your legacy?
100 million percent. Because, you know, when Robin and I were like picking the guys and figuring out what was happening, and there's a lot of guys out there that were supposed to be in Rat that ended up in other bands successful too. Don't have to go through them all. But when Robin and I fucking went, wow, we're both really starting over, you know, after Jakey split, we didn't know what we were actually, what was going to go down. One of the best stories I have is with Rat, because I don't remember much of it. To be honest with you, I don't remember much of that whole fucking decade. And I'm being honest. I remember things like the Forum, San Diego Sports Arena, where I'm from, and Madison Square Gardens. There was just Robin and I had this moment, and it was 85 when we played there, 85, 86. So we're driving up in a limo in the circle going to Madison Square Garden. It's fucking brilliant. And Robin looks at me and goes, it's kind of like Led Zeppelin. Like Song Remains the Same, right? When they filmed there. And I go, not really. And Robin's like, I think we made it. it's like, fuck yeah, we have. We're fucking headlining Madison Square Gardens, motherfucker. You know, it's brilliant. Brilliant. So I think it's anything is, you know, it's a special thing. It's a special thing if you can control it. Unfortunately, like I say, it's a dangerous occupation, and you don't take that seriously if somebody's telling you that, because you're in it. Once you're in it, it's hard to get control of it. But when you do, hopefully it's not too late. And look at the opportunities everybody's having, because the 80s are back. You know, you have bands out there from the 80s. Nobody even knows they're the original guys. They just go, oh, there's that band, right? Well, fortunate enough for me, I created a logo that you can just see it. And right away, you can hear it, smell it, touch it, you know. And so I think I made my point. And coming out of the cellar and 40 years later, going back for me, 2024, because I call in this tour, the Back in the Cellar 1984-2024 tour. I'm embracing it. I'm having a great time, and we got a lot of groovy stuff happening. So I can just say thank you to everybody. And it was a special record and always will be, you know, I mean, hey, it gave me all these other pretty presents, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Anything that you can talk about what's going to be happening later on this year, or is that?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be doing, some really cool shows, which are at officialstephenpiercy.com, and hit a meet, greet, whatever. And then we're going to be announcing a tour, I hear, hopefully soon enough. But in the meantime, my dates are up. They're great shows. Most of them are, I think, headlining, but they're huge shows. And we're having fun. I'm playing the Out of the Cellar record, bang, bang, 40 years later. And we're having a blast. We're having a great time, you know.
Before I forget, last question. Yeah. How are you feeling? Yeah. I know you had the cancer scare a couple years ago. Are you doing all right?
Everything's remission and nothing really weird's going on. And as long as that happens, that's why I'm kind of taking it easy and looking to the next venture next year, because, you know, I don't know what I'm going to be doing, you know, just knock on wood. Thank God I'm still out here. You know, health is good and so far so good. Thank you everybody for, you know, everything and coming out and seeing the shows. I mean, cause this is the last time you're going to get the delivery from me, and it might be the last time for the rat, you know, so that's it. So I'm out there doing my thing for my band Rat, and come on back into the cellar. Come back into the cellar.
Steven, it's been a blast as always, man. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Keep in touch.
Absolutely. Everyone, that is Steven Piercy. Check his tour dates. All his information will be in the show notes. When you're listening, click on the links. It'll bring you right to it. And it's a great album. 40 years, man. And out of the cellar. I can't believe it. I mean, I was 9 years old when that album came out, and I was just listening to it on a walk the other day, and it sounded absolutely phenomenal. It sounded like the first time I listened to it. So check that out. All his links. Thanks again for tuning in. Once again, this is Jay Scott. This is The Hook Rocks. Take care of each other. Stay safe. And we will talk soon. Thank you.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.